Today I will discuss the role of music in the most important state holiday in the socialist Yugoslavia, the Day of Youth. I want to point out to the fact that by analyzing the role of music, we can in fact reconstruct crucial issues in that country at the time, as well as the means the officials used in order to deal with them, at least on the symbolic cultural level. Now, a few remarks regarding the title of my paper. The making of the collective body of all Yugoslavs was a serious project. The bodies themselves were being made due to the investment into the system of free physical education and exercise, and it was promulgated publicly, one of the ways being public holidays, especially the Day of Youth, that was actually central celebration of the year. Of course, music helps shaping the symbolic presentations of this collective body, since the choice of music changed the ways the actual bodies were organized in the field. The first part of my title, Rock and Roll Will Keep Us Together, is a quotation from the 1984 Day of Youth. It was said by announcers during TV broadcast, and it was one of the symptomatic moments in the history of these public celebrations, since the music was publicly proclaimed to be the possible savior of the coming end of the ideal of brotherhood and unity. And as it seems, that was obvious from the Day of Youth organizations, the end of the country itself. I will come to this later. My presentation today will deal with the following issues. Firstly, I need to give you a few pieces of information regarding the Day of Youth itself, its position, the calendar, its importance for the symbolic values of the socialist Yugoslavia, and to point to its transformations during time. Secondly, I will deal with the ways music was incorporated in it. Then my focus will be on the changes in the music, with which analysis I want to show how essential the position and, above all, the choice of music was. So let's move on to the historical data regarding the Day of the Youth. Trying to construct an image of a progressive modern leader, in 1956, Josip Broz Tito proclaimed his birthday, actually 25th of May, which was actually the day he survived the battle in the World War II, and not his actual birthday, to be the day of our youth, sport, young people, and their further physical and spiritual progress, thus connecting himself with the most important part of the nation, the young. Becoming a national holiday, Tito's birthday was prepared during the whole year. The documentation that is kept today in the archive of Yugoslavia shows how long and painstaking this process of preparation could be. There were usually at least two drafts of the possible final celebration. Each of them was analyzed, and only the best suggested solutions were accepted. Also, after one celebration was over, it was immediately discussed about, and sharp critical remarks were a common part of the organizational process for the next year. The Day of Youth had one essential function: to construct discursively and produce practically, bodily, emotionally, the identity of a Yugoslav. And this was done on three levels: making the unity of Yugoslav youth on every possible level, I will not dwell on this here, producing normative collective body due to the concept of physical culture, and regulating everyday life, since the organization of the year was made so that the highest point of it was this celebration that actually represented everything an average Yugoslav was supposed to do on a regular basis, like doing sports or listening to certain kind of music. The role of physical culture was to organize Yugoslav society physically and aesthetically, and then to incorporate concepts and movements from gymnastics into broader concepts of united Yugoslav youth presented in public celebrations, the most typical being firstly the relay of youth, later just the day of youth, in which the relay processions had central part. Ideals upon which the new after-war society rested, such as the ideology of brotherhood and unity, the cult of labor, and the legacy of the partisan struggle, were practiced as daily rituals, and they were connected to the idea of creating a new man, a young person who creates, propagates, and embodies the ideas of the new socialist state in his daily life. The celebration had three phases in its development, even though its history could be divided into the period before and after Tito's death, which was certainly the case when the music is analyzed. The last celebration was organized in 1988, although without the part with the relay and in obvious atmosphere of the breakup of the country that was approaching. And I'm moving on with the music now. The choice of music and the suitable choreography was certainly the most important part of this celebration. Why? Firstly, the music had a constructive function, which means that the organization of the jamboree was made in accordance with the kind of music that was chosen and the place of musical numbers in the whole ceremony. Furthermore, the music had huge symbolic potential since it in fact represented current values and state of affairs in Yugoslavia. It could represent stability or crisis, and which was most often the case, the unity of all nationalities in Yugoslavia. In the after-war period, the music for the slet or jamboree consisted partly of the combination of traditional, partisan, and folk songs, often in different arrangements, which represented the musical illustrations of different important phenomena related to the history of Yugoslavia and Tito's role in it. This meant the following: representation of the unity, representation of the military power, stability of the country, and similar. The dance choreographies usually served to highlight these moments so that it was chosen to help sportspersons on the field to do their own presentations of their bodies that had been made during the whole year due to doing physical culture. Also, music often included folk representations of the collective body. Folk societies were often organized to play different folk dances from divergent parts of Yugoslavia. Thus, it can be said that the music was somewhat pointed towards the great historical past and the role of Yugoslavia in the World War II. Let me just give you a few examples of how it typically looked like. So, the celebration took place on the football field with the center part, which was the procession with relay. And in this period, so the first period, the field was actually the place where that collective body was represented due to more or less complex gymnastic choreographies. And this is one of the traditional folk dances in the field. And also, of course, the end of the celebration of this celebration of the field ended always with giving the relay to Tito. And on the right side, you can see the last celebration during Tito's life. And during this scene, the song called "Tito is Our Son" was playing. However, after Tito's death in 1980, the Day of Youth was in crisis, although the celebration was being organized until the end of the decade. Trying to overcome the change in the country and to pacify the crisis of the ideology of brotherhood and unity, the organizers embarked on the project of modernizing the celebrations by changing the arrangements of the old folk or traditional songs with the use of synthesizers, rhythm machines, rock drums, and similar. From the middle 1980s, rock and roll, as I mentioned, was promulgated as our future, since it was considered to be the music of the youth, thus being the chance to keep us together and reconstruct again the unity of all nations and to reconnect the disappearing collective body that was supposed to be presented in these celebrations and that was obviously already disappearing during the 1980s. Let me just summarize the previous phase. The music could entail folk, partisan, or composed specifically for that occasion. Even when the genre was a certain kind of pop music, it was politically marked music, such as the songs on the Communist Party or Tito himself. One typical example is the song I mentioned, Tito is Our Son, from 1979, The Last Day of Youth, with Tito being present. I here argue that the change in the choice of music was the consequence of the crisis in Yugoslavia, which was actually rather clear. And in addition, I claim that music was one of the last possible solutions, at least on symbolic level, and possibly on the level of regulation of everyday life, for preventing the tragic end of the country. How was it done? By changing the focus. Since obviously the heroic past was not truly relevant for Yugoslavia in the 1980s, the solution was to focus on what was a part of the life of every Yugoslav, and music certainly was. The Yugoslav music was most certainly a brand in that country, and it was politically shaped all the time, and even today it always can have political implications. Namely, in the 1950s, a Yugoslav popular music culture emerged through the development of local festivals, radio programs, and the recording industry. Popular music was also played at events, public celebrations such as the Day of Youth. For instance, as early as 1959, Tito attended a concert in Belgrade for the Youth Day celebrations, at which some of Yugoslavia's best pop singers performed alongside the jazz orchestra of Radio Belgrade. The development of Yugoslav popular music culture at this time was both rooted in international cultural trends and shaped by the domestic policies that were being pursued by the ruling League of Communists of Yugoslavia. After the split with the Soviet Union in 1948, Yugoslavia started producing the music that was constantly being between the East and the West, and the debate on what our music was constantly being present all the time of Yugoslav history. In that aspect, the turning to the music as the solution for the Day of Youth was not surprising. By the 1980s, Yugoslav pop and Yugoslav rock were on their highest points, widely popular both in the country and even abroad. So it really seems logical that on the symbolic level, it was the Yugoslav popular music that had the power to save at least the most important day of the year in Yugoslavia, if not the country itself. As I mentioned, it was proclaimed publicly to be a symbol of our present unity and as our future. But it was not enough. The following strategies were needed to be done in order this project to work out. There were three ways the organizers used the music as a symbol of the disintegrated unity. Firstly, there was the use of popular genres. Instead of the military strict atmosphere, remembrance of the party's heroic past and playing the folk traditional dances, rock and roll was casually played in the middle of the field by young, cheerful people who were casually and colorfully dressed. The symptomatic scene was arranged in 1987. The dancers started playing one traditional round dance in the popular arrangement all together, and then they began separating one by one, which was followed by the commentators of the TV broadcast by the following words. I quote, "What is happening? The round dance is not united. Serbia dances separately, then Croatia, Bosnia and Herzegovina now. Each group plays its own round dance. Why are they playing their own national melodies? This is a warning. We cannot dance with eight different systems." The end of quote. This was musically followed with usage of dissonant chords during the symbolic breakup of Yugoslavia. And then, after a while, they were united again, and it was due to dancing, as they stated, rock round dance. That was actually the same composition, just in a little bit different rock arrangement. The commentator's words were the following. I quote, "Rock is what unites us in everyday life, and it should unite us here. The young, of course, believe in better future, but that is only the future in which we are all together." The end of quote. The second way of promoting pop and rock music was the actual appearance of popular musicians, their songs, or the songs on Yugoslavia and their arrangements. And I'm talking about really popular performers, even actual icons of the Yugoslav popular music scene, such as Zdravko Čolić, Željko Bebek, Josipa Lisac, Zorica Konđa, groups like Novi Fosili, all of them singing about Yugoslavia, although all of them being representatives of rather divergent kinds of popular music in Yugoslavia. Also, the choreographies were made to actual songs played by popular Yugoslav pop musicians, so regular songs, not the ones on Yugoslavia. And some of the songs about Yugoslavia were adapted to the styles of their performers, so that Josipa Lisac sang about Yugoslavia in her jazz-like arrangements. Novi Fosili played light pop, Zorica Konđa played Dalmatian-style canzona-like songs, and so on. I will here single out one specific and very symptomatic example. And by doing that, I'm moving on to my third point, music as a means for fixing the broken brotherhood and unity. In 1984, and I would say as early as 1984, truly a legend of the Yugoslav rock, or Bosnian rock as it is more often called today, Željko Bebek, a singer of the famous group Bijelo Dugme, sang a song entitled Drugarska, a song of the friends, which music is alike the songs of Bijelo Dugme, but the text is actually a prayer, not of the Yugoslavs in general, not of the young, but of the children, who ask their parents to let them live long enough to grow up. This is the text of the song's refrain. The war should not happen to us, just that we could prove that we are patriots. The war should not happen to us so that we can be heroes. Isn't that the case, my friends? So this is truly a call for peace, for common sense, listening to a song that belonged to a kind of music that was extremely popular at that time in Yugoslavia. The Yugoslavs were asked to think about their children's future. We can see how far from the previous phase this celebration was, even though just a couple of years apart. Let me briefly sum up this phase. After Tito's death, the public celebrations drastically changed, along with symbolic presence of the former leader, whose pictures was always there, as you can see from this slide, so only some kind of image instead of Tito himself. The symbolic values of the past were transformed. However, all the time, the idea that marked all celebrations from the beginning until the end is the idea of brotherhood and unity. Being obviously in danger after Tito's death, this idea was promoted with help of what seemed to be one of the most influential Yugoslav projects, its music. So, on the left picture, you can see casual dancing to one of very popular song by Bijelo Dugme, and on the other side, young people casually playing rock and roll. In conclusion, I will just briefly point to the contemporary perspective. The post-Yugoslav space is musically intriguing. It seems even more than the Yugoslav one. Since today we are dealing with the issue of remembrance of both Yugoslavia and the wars when listening to certain kind of music. I will actually finish with a question that I came upon. If the collective body was being made physically, emotionally, musically, both in everyday life and in public presentations, what has happened to that collectivity? It could not disappear together with Yugoslavia, since we are talking about real people who may not live as they used to, but they can certainly choose to listen or not to listen a certain kind of music. So my final and further question for my research is, and it has a certain utopian implication, but I argue that it is worth discussing. Has the Yugoslav collective survived the end of Yugoslavia due to one of its firmest products, the music. Just the same as the officials tried to do during the public celebrations in the 1980s. Thank you.